Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels. And our guest this episode, we've got Nicholas Katowski, two-time head-to-head walleye fishing league champion. He and his brother, Andrew, for the second year in a row, won head-to-head walleye fishing league. If you're not familiar with that, go online, do a little bit of research after the podcast. There's videos. You can watch the replays about everything that we're talking about in this interview. But it's the walleye fishing league where they have live cameras in the boat. And the competition where they go, you know, each team goes head-to-head against another team each regular season event. It's similar to the Major League Fishing in the bass world where they get a live weight of each fish they catch, and that gets tallied into their, you know, the total weight. So it's the total weight of fish that they catch against the other team's total weight of fish that they catch. So it's kind of a numbers game as well as a size game. It's definitely not an eight-hour fishing day where you weigh your five best like so many other tournament formats. This is a four-hour fishing competition. It's entertaining in its own right, but it's also an opportunity. If you go back and watch the videos, it's a great opportunity to learn. I like watching it and seeing these high-level anglers operate, making decisions in this compressed time frame to, you know, figure out how to trigger and catch fish, or the decisions they make, the adjustments they make when they decide, you know, maybe they got to move and find new fish that are going to bite or whatever it is, and they can see, you know, they can see what the other team is doing as far as, like, you know, how many fish they're catching and what their weight is. They know if they're winning or losing and how that all factors in. It's really an interesting thing that we don't have it anywhere else in the walleye fishing tournament realm. So anyways, that's just my little plug for all this. I haven't talked a whole lot about it on the podcast, but it's very, very fun to have Nicholas on to kind of introduce us to the details and everything that goes into this league and what goes into strategizing and fishing this league. And yeah, just to highlight what an incredible feat for Nicholas and his brother Andrew to be back-to-back winners of it. So anyways, that's my long intro here. Let's get into it. We've got Nicholas Katowski on for the first time. Let's do it. The Onyx Fish App is the roadmap to your next great fishing adventure. The Onyx Fish App brings together all the great research tools that we talk about all the time on the JMO podcast with all the top pros. I'm talking about satellite imagery, lake surveys, fisheries data, contour maps, the list goes on. They're all in one place now. Anglers in the Midwest have never had a more valuable research tool at their disposal. Head over to the website to subscribe today. Use promo code JMO for a discount at checkout. And I'll say it again, your next great fishing adventure that you don't even know exists can be found on the Onyx Fish app. Summit Fishing Equipment brings technology and innovation together to improve fishing equipment design and usability. Their forward-facing sonar shuttle transducer pole combos are designed to be used year-round. With just a few accessories you'll find on the website, you can mount the shuttle and transducer pole right in your boat, making the transition from ice season to open water incredibly simple and cost-effective. Check out everything they've got at summitfishingequipment.com. Use code SUMMIT10 at checkout for 10% off all orders online. That link is in the description of this podcast. If you like to fish and or hunt in the state of North Dakota, I highly recommend you check out the North Dakota Outdoors Podcast that's put on by the North Dakota Game and Fish Department, a phenomenal source of all kinds of topics happening at the Game and Fish Department throughout the seasons. For example, recent episode topics include pheasant crowing counts or the importance of outdoor education, also the state of the bighorn sheep, and of course, seasonal fishing topics are always happening. Again, if you like to fish and or hunt in the state of North Dakota, the North Dakota Outdoors Podcast is for you. You'll find it anywhere you'll find the JMO Podcast, and if you want a shortcut, you can find a link in the description. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations, and to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. And get all that. We're talking about the lodging and restaurant options and just the lay of the land and everything going on in the community. There's all kinds of stuff all summer long going on in and around the community of Devil's Lake. That link is in the description. So I just want to have you go off a little bit here on who you are, where you're from, and where your passion for walleye fishing really got it going. And I want to, you know, start at the beginning and get right up to kind of where you're at today. So this take as much time as you need, man. Who are you?
Yeah, first off, thank you. I'm honored. I currently live in West Bend, Wisconsin, a little bit south of Lake Winnebago. Lived there about 11 years. I grew up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, the UP. I'm very fortunate. At a very young age, my parents bought a motel in between Escanaba and Gladstone, Michigan. Very unique situation growing up. I was in the center of the Beta Knock walleye boom, trophy destination. I grew up night fishing as much as we could. From the age of 5, 6, I was fishing as much as I could. I could think back, my grandparents living on the Whitefish River, the head of the bay, fishing off the dock every time I was out there. That was the first thing I would do. I'd run across the yard, and I was on the dock fishing. I've grown up around it. I would see the legends of the walleye world, Gary Parsons, Keith Cavias. I mean, they stayed at the motel when the big tournaments, the PWP, I mean, some of the FLW tournaments would be in town, and currently the National Walleye Tour. They'd be in the parking lot rigging rods and getting their boats set up to go fish the tournaments. And I'm this 8-year-old kid running around, standing on everybody's, you know, trailers, peeking inside the boats at everything going on, conversating with the anglers. I really had a special opportunity. My brother and I had a special opportunity. It was the centerfold of us growing up. My parents tried to base the motel off of the whole tourist fishing aspect, and we were lucky. Even growing up into my early teens, my father was the president of the fishing club in Escanaba for 4 years, and I would sit in the meetings and listen to all the conversations with the tournaments and the hatchery, you know, the raising of the fish in the ponds in the summer. I get to go net fingerlings and plant them in the fall. It was the centerfold of what we were doing there. I grew up in it. The tournament angling aspect of it, I guess it just kind of came with, I played baseball through high school, and I always had a passion for fishing, but when I lost the competition side of baseball, I started leaning on the fishing side of it. I started wanting to fish more club tournaments or bar tournaments, you know, as a local scene. And then my uncle fished some larger club tournaments like the Midwest Walleye Series out of Green Bay. So I got to travel to Green Bay and see my father and him fish it. It really was, I was involved from the word go. Lucky enough growing up with the anglers and the individuals staying at the motel, I got to meet some incredible people. And one of them in Joe Okada. Known Joe for over 20 years. Such a humble individual and extremely professional. He's shown me a few things along the way that I use every day. It's something that I call it a passion. Some people call it an addiction. It's a love. I've been immersed in it.
You know, talking about the fishing specifically, what were some of your earliest, successes? You talk about the exposure and the opportunity and you started getting your appetite kind of established itself. But looking more so, in the last 5 to 10 years, I'm curious about, just kind of your fishing style and how you've kind of developed, on a higher level personally over the years.
Yeah, with forward-facing sonar the last 5, 6 years, it's been the centerfold of the fishing world. Growing up, it was trolling. You got your crankbaits, you've got your spinner rigs, and we did a fair share of jigging also during the spring run. Everything we did, it was kind of the time of the year dependent on it, and trolling was the gig. You got your offshore planer boards, your line counter reels, lead core was a big deal. It's still is to a point. But as I grew up, I guess the intriguing part to me, I can think back to 2014 when Gary and Keith did extremely well with Moonshine Shiver Minnows in Escanaba. That's like my backyard. And holy cow, somebody's casting this aggressive style bait and they're succeeding at it. And this is before forward facing sonar. And it opened up a whole new like outlook in how these fish are reacting to me. You don't have to just put out four lines and pray that you're going to get a bite.
Yeah.
You know, you're literally putting these baits on fish's heads when you're marking them with your 2D and force feeding them in a way. Leading into now, I wasn't quite sure what the forward-facing sonar was about at first. Didn't think it was too much of a big deal. I was hard nose dive right into spinner rig fishing. I thought it was a finesse game, you know, color dependent with the Great Lakes and the Bay of Green Bay being clear water. That's what I was fully diving into. After a couple years of forward-facing sonar, I started to realize that I'm going to get left behind. And I actually left the trolling rods at home one day and went out and forced myself to jig and cast. And I really never looked back. Early success in some tournaments gave me the fortunate opportunity to purchase an active target, and it's just been ground running. I want to put a fishing rod in my hand. I want to read the reaction of the fish. To me, I don't see it any other way as fun as catching a fish aggressively with a rod in your hand. Like, it's just the trolling game for me. I'm praying for a bite. I feel like I can manipulate the fish a little bit into eating with a jig rod.
I want to get into the head-to-head stuff, but I kind of want to start with more so like the story of how you got into head-to-head, how you found out about it, how the head-to-head fishing became an opportunity for you.
So I think it was back in 2019 I started fishing some AIM tournaments. And really getting into the club tournament scene. I believe it was 2019 was the first year for head-to-head fishing in the bass style. Bass in the bass leagues. They ran some trial runs, filmed it, aired it, and I was intrigued with it. It wasn't your traditional go big fish hunting. It was, to me, it was a sprint to the finish. And I was intrigued. And in 2020, 2021, difficult times with the economy and COVID and everything else, was a great opportunity for head-to-head to showcase to the world what they were going to bring to the table. Now, there's other formats out there in the bass world, like head-to-head fishing. But in the walleye world, there's nothing like it. I missed the opportunity to jump into a head event in 2020 and 2021. But when I found out that the league was set up last year, I couldn't lose the opportunity again. So I had a few connections in Jeff Nechterline to reach out to Kyle Carpenter, the tournament director, Brian Keller, who's created the format. And they got a good word in for me, and I was invited to fish last year. Well, in the conversation of, I had to find a partner. It's a team event. So I asked my brother, and he was willing to do it. We thought it would be a fun experience. We just hit the ground running. The format is, there's nothing like it. It's an adrenaline rush. I guess you have to experience to fully grasp what it's like. In 2021, they ran, I believe it was 2021, they ran the PWS series. I could be wrong on the date, maybe 2022. And they had 32 anglers run that series, and I was glued to the TV. So when I got the invite and the conversation with Kyle, it was a no-brainer. Like, I'm not losing the opportunity. I'm in it. Even if I had to do it alone, but with my brother saying yes, it was a definite goal.
Maybe just sort of describe to me what as in, from an angler's perspective, what it means to be like to sign on as a team for this head-to-head deal.
You know, the biggest thing that comes with head-to-head is it's not just the format, it's the live cameras. The camera's in your face and you're mic'd up. Everything you say is out in the world. That was a shell shock. It took a few events to kind of understand what's really happening. With that, you got some added rules. You know, integrity is a huge aspect of it. You know, they've gone through the different changes in what is a legally hooked fish and fine-tuned it to in and around the mouth. So that you know, that there's a little more specific ruling on what the legally fish caught or legally caught fish is in head-to-head. There's, you know, like the swearing penalties. You accidentally swear and you're sitting down for 5 minutes. You're watching the fish do their thing and you can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
Or like the care. Then that's the biggest thing to me is the handling of the fish. It's the catch, the weigh, and the immediate release. We get live weigh with a scale, and our camera official is the judge of the call of the weight also. But if you accidentally catch a sheephead and just chuck it off the side of the boat, that's a fish release penalty. It's a 2-minute penalty.
Yeah.
You're once again, you're sitting down and you're not fishing. Well, if you're not cognizant of that and you get one or two or three penalties in a 4-hour match, say you sit down for 10 minutes, that's a lot of time.
Yeah.
In a 4-hour event. So it's just, there's a lot of other aspects that you're thinking of while you're fishing when it comes to the rules. And then for the fish itself, what is a weighable fish was determined to be 1 pound and larger. I believe, I'm not 100% sure, I think it was 1 pound also last year. And in 2025 this year, it was 1 pound and larger is a weighable fish in the format. It's not a five fish biggest format. It is as many as you can catch in a 4-hour period. Go. The clock's ticking. Efficiency's key. Decision-making is critical. Everything you do is time. And the more time you have with your bait and your water, the higher percentage of hookup and getting bit exists.
Yeah, it's totally different. Totally different than an 8-hour day, 5 best fish.
It's a, like I said, it's a sprint. And an 8-hour day to me right now is like a marathon. Like I hit 11 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, oh man, I get 4 more hours.
Yeah.
These matches are pure adrenaline. Like last year, every match I had the jitters before, I had the adrenaline rush during, and then the crash afterwards.
Oh yeah.
And some people can probably look at it and be like, well, it's just 4 hours of fishing. Everybody does that almost every time they hit the water. It is nonstop. You're mentally focused on the task at hand, always criticizing yourself on decision-making. Did I unhook that fish fast enough? Like my brother and I, went out and bought different nets than what we traditionally use or originally used. And we bought rubber nets because the hooks don't go through the rubber as bad as they do the conservation series nets. We bought nets that were a little shallower, so you're not digging into the bottom and have all this extra piled up net. It's every second is wasted is time you could be fishing. The mental aspect of it is draining at the end of a 4-hour match.
That's what it looks like, is it looks like just so much intensity. It's intense to watch. Like, I'm not saying I watched every second of the you know, the series this year, but I watched as much as I could, like anybody else. And just watching it, like, oh my gosh, it's yeah, dude, that whole live camera deal is such a great thing, opportunity for consumers to watch fishing like on a high level. Like, but it's, yeah, like it's kind of intense.
You know, even with the live camera and the intensity of kind of throwing yourself out to the public, to add to the intensity, within our phones, we have an app that we submit our catches, the Waylive app. And every time you open that app, you see exactly what your opponent for that match is doing. The number of fish, the average fish, how much weight they have. Talk about anxiety and stress, and you're coming down to 15 minutes with a 1-pound lead, knowing that one fish you could lose the match. It's pure adrenaline. There is no relaxing. In the consumer aspect, like sponsors and putting yourself out there, there's nothing like it for walleye anglers. It's immediate response. Every week, you've got people commenting. I go to work, I spray insulation, and I run into people all over the place. Hey, I know you. I watched you yesterday. You know, it's immediate. It's not, you don't have to wait for an article to be released or results to be posted somewhere. Like, somebody somewhere is watching it now.
Yeah. That's kind of an interesting thought. Tell me more about your brother. Tell me about your brother and what makes him a good partner for you.
I will say this first and foremost. I can be pretty obnoxious on the boat. I'm very competitive, and he can tolerate anything I throw at him. We bicker like brothers, because we are, but we know it's not personal, and I love him for that. I say a lot. I don't mean it the way I say it. I don't realize I say it sometimes, some of the things I do. I commend him for that. The partner aspect of it, I guess I was more so looking for somebody that I fished with before. I mean, we grew up fishing together. He took a hiatus and he joined the Army and he did his 4 years and did some schooling and he was gone for 5 or 6 years and he had come back and he's like, I need something to do. I'm going to be bored when I come home. I'm like, well, let's start fishing together. It was really just that. And we had planned on fishing another team circuit when the opportunity with head-to-head come up. So the conversation was, this is the opportunity we have, we may not ever get again, versus going and doing the standard. So it was a really easy process to ask, hey, are you willing and able? And it was an immediate yes. In the boat, we grew up together fishing in the boat. Dad had a 17-foot aluminum boat, a Tracker, 1994. That's what we learned how to fish out of. We learned tight spaces, working around each other, efficiently working. You know, you can't leave stuff laying all over the place and tripping over it because you're going to end up breaking it. And it happened. You know, we got hollered at from Dad a few times, but sometimes you learn the hard way. And in today's world, with what we have going on today, I found a few different times where I'm doing something and he catches on with it, and it's like second nature because we've done it forever.
Yep.
It's a blessing because we've seen multiple teams not click. And you can see them get a little chippy in the boat, and the fishing really, it's not as efficient, and it struggles. You're like, you can tell the team struggles working together. They're trying to work the kinks out. It was almost automatic for us to just jump in the boat together and go. Some people may see it as bickering. I see it as that nudge.
Yeah.
You know, don't keep focus in a way. It does. We do gel pretty well.
The Onyx Fish App is the roadmap to your next great fishing adventure. The Onyx Fish App brings together all the great research tools that we talk about all the time on the JMO podcast with all the top pros. I'm talking about satellite imagery, lake surveys, fisheries data, contour maps, the list goes on. They're all in one place now. Anglers in the Midwest have never had a more valuable research tool at their disposal. Head over to the website to subscribe today. Use promo code JMO for a discount at checkout. And I'll say it again, your next great fishing adventure that you don't even know exists can be found on the Onyx Fish app. Summit Fishing Equipment brings technology and innovation together to improve fishing equipment design and usability. Their forward-facing sonar shuttle transducer pole combos are designed to be used year-round. With just a few accessories you'll find on the website, you can mount the shuttle and transducer pole right in your boat, making the transition from ice season to open water incredibly simple and cost-effective. Check out everything they've got at summitfishingequipment.com. Use code SUMMIT10 at checkout for 10% off all orders online. That link is in the description of this podcast. If you like to fish and or hunt in the state of North Dakota, I highly recommend you check out the North Dakota Outdoors podcast that's put on by the North Dakota Game and Fish Department, a phenomenal source of all kinds of topics happening at the Game and Fish Department throughout the seasons. For example, recent episode topics include pheasant crowing counts or the importance of outdoor education, also the state of the bighorn sheep, and of course, seasonal fishing topics are always happening. Again, if you like to fish and or hunt in the state of North Dakota, the North Dakota Outdoors podcast is for you. You'll find it anywhere you'll find the JMO podcast, and if you want a shortcut, you can find a link in the description. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com and get all that. We're talking about the lodging and restaurant options and just the lay of the land and everything going on in the community. There's all kinds of stuff all summer long going on in and around the community of Devil's Lake. That link is in the description. Everything that I've seen of this, like, there's a lot to appreciate about all the teams. And I like to take away from, you know, everything that I see on there. But you guys specifically, I think that, the magic that you guys have as brothers has definitely contributed to the success. Now, I want to talk a little bit about this season and even, you know, referencing, you know, last season's success. But like I'm just curious, what is it like to grind through the schedule of this head-to-head series? Because it's quite a commitment. You got a lot of competitions. Like, you got a lot of dates. It's not like, you know, the NWT's got four stops plus a championship and not everybody qualifies for that. It's like all these other tournament circuits, you know, it's three stops, four stops, whatever. But it seems like, you know, you guys, it's quite a commitment, man. So I'm sort of curious about, you know, the schedule and the places that you guys have gone, you know, talking about the fish and what all goes into strategizing for essentially so many events and the whole head-to-head thing.
You know, in 2024, the regular season schedule was based off of a round-robin schedule. There was 10 teams. Everybody played each other once. So it was 9 weeks of regular season. And then it was, I believe, the top eight teams got advanced into a playoff. Win, move on, lose, you go home, kind of like an NCAA bracket or a playoff football-style bracket. This year was a little different in the term of the schedule. only being 7 weeks. It was great conversation in the winter months with the tournament director that 9 was quite a bit. You know, and ultimately it was 12 matches when you count the 3 in the playoffs. That's a lot of commitment, a lot of extra time. This year was 7 weeks. It was random draw for the schedule, so we didn't see a few teams this year during the regular season. It was still a regular bracket style, win you move on, lose you go home in the playoffs, but the first round or the first seed team in 2025 got a first round bye. So it was 2 versus 6, 3, 5, however it worked out. And then it was whoever advanced played the number one seed, you move on, just like football. The commitment style or the commitment end of it, it wasn't easy. My brother and I live in West Bend, Wisconsin. It takes me 45 minutes to get to the very southern end of Lake Winnebago. And the schedule was Green Bay and Lake Winnebago, alternate or back-to-back weeks, and then changing around. It was random. 45 minutes to get to Fond du Lac, which is the south side of Lake Winnebago. 1 hour to get to Oshkosh, an hour and 15 minutes to get to the upper Bay. The Fox River, it took us an hour and 20 minutes. The Bay of Green Bay, it takes us an hour and a half. And it's 2 hours to Sturgeon Bay. It's 2 hours to Oconto. We kind of threw ourselves out there being one of the furthest teams away on the average for driving. The time that we had hoped to put into every match unfortunately didn't work out the way we wanted to. We had many matches where we were only able to fish a single Saturday or a single Sunday before the event and hoped something stuck. In 2024, we had quietly partnered up with another team and shared basic information. There was never spot on the spot. There was never, this is the lure we're using. It was, hey, water temps, I'm looking at this, depth of the fish. And just off of the experience and the time spent on the water in the last 15 years, you can kind of put the puzzle pieces together and just go make something happen, at least through practice. Occasionally, we would have a slow period at work where we would snag a Tuesday off or maybe fish a couple evenings. In 2024, there were AM and PM matches, so that was beneficial to have an evening match, and the bite windows were similar. In 2025, they were 100% AM, which I favored. It made it difficult trying to figure out your bite windows in the middle of the week and you're not on the water. So my brother this fall or this spring started his own electrical business. The conversation after we won last year was, hey, if we're going to fish 2025, let's give ourselves 2 days of practice, whether it's a Tuesday or a Monday or it's a Saturday, Sunday, before each match. Let's make a go at this. We've got a target on our back. It didn't happen. We struggled to find time. Work for myself got extremely busy. The company's growing, and then with him building his own electrical business, he swamped. So it was deemed by other anglers Wing It Wednesday for the Katowski brothers.
That's cool though. I think, you know, that might be my segue question into the fishing, you know, getting more kind of into the fishing this year and strategizing for this type of a tournament or this type of a format. You got 4 hours, you got, you know, it's always in the morning, having limited pre-fish. I mean, I'm always kind of curious about that. Like sometimes, you know, pre-fish goes different directions for people. Either it's a bad pre-fish and you turn it into a good tournament. Sometimes people have too good of a pre-fish, you know. So like with you guys, you know, more often than not having limited pre-fish, I'm curious to sort of hear how the fishing went throughout the season. you know, the regular season, what the fishing was like, where you were, what the conditions were that you were running into, and maybe even kind of how you guys decided to strategize each of these tournaments, especially the ones when you had little to no pre-fish to go off of. I'm just, you know, I'm curious to just hear kind of how the fishing went.
You know, with the time on the water prior to head-to-head, you have the idea of the migration, you know, leading right out of the spawn. Where are fish going? What are they feeding on? And then you get bits and pieces of like water temperature and consistencies with wind and current and how the fish should stack up. So you can kind of put a little bit of a thought process together. My father's always told me I fish really fast. I have time limits in certain locations. I think to be efficient, you need to have a mentally running clock. If something's not happening as fast as you hope, don't hang your hat on it too long. Move on. Our practice periods were like full-blown run and gun. Cover water, see fish. Even if you don't catch fish, it's documented. Maybe another day is, you know, it's a new day and you can get something to trigger. That's really what we had tried to do. The days we did get to practice, if it was a full day, it was a 12 to 14 hour day. So we were able to locate certain schools of fish, play a little bit, get a couple bites, and then it's trial and error. We were fortunate enough with some of our regular season wins, we were figuring it out in the second hour. Adaptability is key with this format on a four-hour match. And it could also burn you if you don't have a good number one or number two spot because you really don't have a lot of time to hit three, four, or five like you do in an eight-hour day.
Yeah.
We try to fish efficiently fast. I think that's the easiest way I can say it.
And you guys, and this is interesting, you know, it kind of interesting for me to watch because I didn't watch every single week. I just didn't have the opportunities, but I'm, you know, when I was watching, I'm sort of seeing, you know, they keep track of your wins and losses in these head-to-head matchups throughout the regular season. And you ended up, like you say, you still got to, you know, most of the teams end up in the playoff for the championship at the end of the year, but not everybody. So you got to have a few wins. Well, you guys ended up, what, the seventh seed? Is that right?
Yeah, this year we snuck in.
Yeah, so you kind of snuck in because it's the top eight?
Top seven.
Or it's the top seven. You guys were literally the seventh of seven seeds coming out of the regular season. Yeah, because the first ranked team gets a bye.
We were essentially a win and you're in situation the last week. And if we had lost, we needed help from another team. It was essentially playoff mentality. Like, we're going to go out and get it done. We have to. If we want to play in 3 weeks, we're going out to win. It was a very tough bite this year, the last match. And it was, in my eyes, an anticipated tough bite against Eric McCoy. A couple hammers. And in one of the hustlers in the nation right now.
Yeah.
Call it luck, sneaking into the playoffs, just like last year, all you have to do is have a chance. You get an opportunity to be able to go put 2-3 days of practice together, playoff stretch or the, you know, the championship run, anything can happen. So to us, whether or not you're in as a 4 seed or a 7 seed, we just wanted to be in.
So, yeah, like with the playoff, I want to hear a little bit about the bite because I want to just kind of talk fishing for a little bit. Like, what's it like this time of year to break down that area if you're launching or if you're fishing the tournament out of bait and knock? Now, did you guys have boundaries? I'm just sort of curious about, you know, where you got to be at to fish, and then walk me through what it's like to break down that body of water. What does everything look like? What are you looking for? And, you know, and just kind of walk me through a bit of your process in a little bit more detail.
Yeah, so boundaries for this year's playoffs, we had almost all of Green Bay's Michigan waters available. The cutoff was the mouth of the Cedar River to the east of Whalesback, and then follow the border up and around to Summer, Detour Island, and off the Garden Peninsula. So all of Big Bay was in play, all of Little Bay down to Cedar River. A lot of water. And it's big water. Tons of structure on every shoreline. You've got shoals off of the Stonington Peninsula. And then you can never disregard the numbers of, call them slot fish, your 18 to 20 inch fish in Little Bay to Knot proper. In the way of breaking down a body of water, to me, in the northern portion of Green Bay, current is a huge factor. So your wind and weather conditions drive the way a lot of these fish will set up. In Green Bay, there's a natural flow of current. But with a consistent five-day south wind, you kind of have that thought process that anything facing south of rock pile or reef or islands, fingers, you know, points off the main shoreline should technically have fish stacked up on it. That's how I'm looking for fish this time of year. Their walleyes are lazy ambush feeders. They will use any advantage that they can to lay on the bottom and wait for something to roll by them and eat it. In August, the alewives have finally moved out of the northern portion of Green Bay. These fish have been on a suspended bait fish feeding frenzy for months. So the fish will school up. They'll suspend off the bottom. As you can see with some of the video, we're looking at 20 to 50 fish in a school. Incredible numbers. So when you added all the factors of the wind out of the south for 5 days straight, the bait fish are leaving, which there were still some pods around. And then it's the mentality of we need to eat. Winter comes, there's just a natural clock. These fish were chewing. Breaking down the system, there's so much out there. It's about covering water. I think we ended up doing, it was close to 65 miles, maybe 70 miles worth of running around on, I believe it was Sunday. We went out of Escanaba and ran all the way to Big Bay, poked around the shoals off of Stonington Peninsula, and made our way over to the Ford River. The fish are grouped up this time of year. Utilizing live imaging was key. You can scan with your side imaging so much and pick some schools out or find your transition lines with rock and sand, but the live imaging was really key, and it was bow mount at 100%, covering water at 2 miles an hour, and locating schools of fish. So it was a numbers game to us. How many fish can we find in a specific location?
And I'm curious about the quality of fish. Like, it's so impressive for anybody that's like myself that's not from there to watch people fish, you know, these Green Bay tournaments, which that's such a big general, like I'm generalizing because Green Bay is humongous. You're talking the northern tier, but like when I'm not from there and I don't always understand it, it's so impressive. But you guys kind of almost make it look like you could blind cast and catch, you know, 4 to 6 pounders without even, you know, thinking about it. Like your dog could do it, right? It's like, you know, but obviously there's so much more to that. You guys are kind of figuring some things out, but I'm curious with this format and everything that we're talking about and everything that you went through, was there any sort of keys to the operation to find that balance of like numbers and quality, or is it truly just like everywhere? You're just following these giant migrations and all you guys are fishing the same areas because it's all that obvious? Or like, do you feel like you kind of had to dig in and figure out like, okay, there's fish in a lot of places but there's bigger ones over here. Okay, but these ones over here are kind of bitey. Is there sort of a story there that you guys were putting some pieces together that kind of came to fruition for you?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you look at some of the other teams, they had good bites. I mean, great bites, 100 pounds worth of weight in Big Bay. And other teams had 50 pounds worth of fish off of the peninsulas. There's a lot of fish everywhere right now in the northern portion of Green Bay. Almost any rock pile, you can pull a resident fish off of it or find migrating schools. The biggest part of it was the driving factor of the wind and the current setting these fish up on specific locations. The aspect of numbers versus big fish, and it's more of a math game. How many fish at what weight can we get to a certain number? My number going into this event was 100 pounds a match. I figured somebody at some point would have to do 100 pounds to advance, if not once, twice. And it showed, I think there was three or four teams that put up 100 pounds at one point in time.
Yeah, and that's so insane, man. Like just the thought of that, like 100 pounds in 4 hours for a couple of guys, especially when most of the guys that are doing this, it's like everybody that I'm seeing that was putting up that kind of weight is doing this whole forward sonar thing. So it's like you're catching them one at a time. It ain't, you know, giant spreads of planer boards where you're sucking them in and you've got two or three in a net at a time. It's almost just unconscious to think about, but you guys are living it, and you like literally have to go to bed the night before thinking that we need to be that good tomorrow. We need to prepare ourselves for battle to be that good tomorrow and for every match here on out, because that's what it's going to take at one point in time or another, and we can't let off the gas. It's just so, to me, it's just so fascinating. But yeah, like doing that math, 100 pounds, like in your mind, how many fish does that have to be? Like what, like are you thinking in numbers or in averages? Like, is this happening in real time where, like, you know, you get 4, 5, 6 fish in a row that just, you know, aren't up to your average standard? Like, do you feel like you got to make moves and find the 6 to 8 pounders? Or like, I'm sort of curious, so curious how you feel and track that.
Well, it is a math thing. It's, you know, we've found some fish, some pods of fish that were of the higher class 7, 8 pound pods, you know, 7, 8 pound fish. But the numbers weren't there. And it's ultimately what you feel you can do per event, 4 hour event to win. And you have to, and there's a little bit of like, how do I want to call this? There's a little bit of like sizing up the team you're going against, per se. And understanding, like, okay, so how much knowledge do you feel this team has in this section of the water? Will they put up 50 pounds? Will they put up 30 pounds? Or will they do 100? So that's what you have to kind of plan for to advance. In the term of, like, 3 matches back to back to back and no break in between, you have to be cognizant of how hard are you going to hit these fish on the first match? Will they last the second match? Do you have anything left?
Yeah.
And that's part of like running around, and it's no different than really an 8 hour event where you've got your number one spot, number two, number three, and it's all dictated on the size of the fish. In a 5 fish tournament, it's obviously your biggest ones. In this format, with as many that count over 1 pound, you have to think about how many fish you can catch in 4 hours of that size. Knowing when we rolled up onto our spot and seeing 20 to 40 fish in a group, and then you catch one that's 4 pounds, a couple minutes later you get a 7-pounder, then you get a 5.5, and then you get a 28 incher, and it's like, oh, this is the deal here. So in the term, in that term, it's kind of like, that's the best case scenario.
Yeah. Yeah.
You could just go in and just fish. You don't really have to play the, well, I have 8 pounders over there, but I don't know if I can even get 10 bites a day. Over here, there's thousands of fish. I know I'll get 20 bites a day. So if you take the average size fish at 4.5, 5 pounds, you know you're putting up 90 to 100 pounds. 100 pounds a day in this format is a crazy day. And to put into perspective, like what Joe did one day, he was 76 pounds by himself, is like mind-boggling. He's an animal, just an absolute machine.
One thing you brought up earlier that I think is definitely, I'm so curious about, and it's fun. This is kind of one of those fun things when for consumers that are watching it, is when you guys do enter a fish or you do decide to go look at the phone and see what your competition is up to. I'm curious, did that ever dictate like a major decision for you? Like how the team you were going against, like seeing whether you had a lead or were way behind, did that ever like drive any sort of major decisions that you feel like did or didn't pay off?
Yes. We watched that phone almost religiously, whether or not you're up or down. And when you're up, you want that clock to tick as fast as possible. It'll never go any faster or slower. It's the same no matter what.
Yeah.
But you want it to just all of a sudden be done and over with when you're up. And when you're down, it's the reverse aspect. It's, oh, I need more time. 100%. It plays with your head too. Like it's a mental game. That's the mental side of it. It's the timing per hour. Like if you watch the commentators, they break it down per quarter, 4 hours, 1 hour, a quarter. And you can kind of check your pace at which you're going at. And that's always a thought process when you're fishing too. So if I'm down, say on Green Bay, I'm down by 10 pounds, but I caught 20 pounds in that hour, and I feel I can do 20 pounds the next hour. Will the 30-pound per hour pace keep up? Well, that's something you have to kind of watch and dictate. But a lot of that has to do with, are you on your best spot and you have nothing as good? Are your fish going to continue to fire? Do you think you can do better somewhere else? It's the mental game. And it's the cliche, never leave fish to find fish, will inevitably burn you. We watched that app and utilized it as a tool. Other teams did not. I think it was, and I could be wrong on this one, but I believe the first match of the year, we were down pretty big in the first like hour and a half. And we ran and we ran and we ran because we knew where we had started was not going to keep pace with how the other team started. And we landed on something that was absolutely magical. I think it was 40 something pounds in 1 hour. It was like 8, 9 fish in an hour. And at the end of the match, the other team, before the interview was done, didn't even realize that they lost. It's available to everybody. Utilize it as a tool as necessary. So yeah, we use it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. That's a phenomenal answer, I feel like, because all information is good information if you're figuring out how to leverage it. It's a tool. You guys are super aware of that. You communicate. You know, that's just another one where you guys just kind of, you and your brother Andrew have, you know, it's like you just know how to communicate to each other correctly, good or bad news. You know?
Yeah.
You know, it's like you know, there's something to that where, you know, everybody, you know, anybody can love to share good news, you know, from the front to the back or the back to the front of the boat. But that's one of those things where you guys never communicated that where it would lull you to sleep, but you also, you know, you always knew how to communicate when the chips are down, we need to put our foot on the gas. You know, it sounds so simple, but Yes, when you have a live camera in the back of the boat, you've got wildly limited time. I still can't get over what it would be like to fish, you know, against that level of competition and only have 4 hours to do it. Yeah, dude, like that's so crazy, man. That's so crazy. Yeah, it's like you're like a race car driver. Like, it's just insane, dude. Like, man, oh man, that's crazy. So yeah, you know, I don't know, I guess for like maybe a little bit of a closer, I would be curious again to kind of dive back into the fishing and talk a little bit about, you know, what you described as your bite. You know, that in the last, during the playoffs there, you basically have a day and a half of fishing. You got a 4 hour match in the morning and it's all win or go home. So you win your match in the morning, then you go back and you fish 4 hours in the afternoon against another opponent that had just won their morning match. And then you win that one. Then you go to bed and you wake up and you've got a 4 hour morning match for the championship. I'm curious, you know, if you were to say, you know, kind of more of the specifics or the details of what, you know, in hindsight now, what were some of the things that you kind of did have figured out or some of the risks that you took that did pay off to win that match in terms of any gambles that you made on your fish, you know, or, you know, everything that we kind of described and talked about. I'm kind of curious in detail how you would describe, you know, the spots you were fishing. What were some of the meaningful things that happened?
You know, we had three primary locations that we were confident in numbers. Obviously, the number one location was where most of the damage was done. But our number two location, we had actually gone to at the end of each match to finish the days out. And in the first match, we had found out in practice, and this was by pure happenstance, that the team we were actually sharing lodging with, Ted and Cody, found the same group of fish, the same structure as us. And we managed to stumble across each other on Monday before the match, double checking on our fish. So there was conversation, you know, back at the house about, okay, we obviously know the potential of this location. How are we going to share this to make it last? So the conversation of, you know, if you're up by 30 or 40 pounds and when you're going to leave and how are we going to share the structure? You know, don't crisscross paths. Do you want inside, outside? That came into play, a fairly long conversation. Ultimately, in the match one, the section that I had fished, they weren't loaded there. They were on top to the west side of that structure, which was the section that Ted and Cody had chose. And we were mutual on that decision. So in the first hour, I felt we weren't catching fish fast enough to really stay. I went into search mode. The numbers weren't really there. Didn't really pay attention if they were catching fish. Like, we were close, but we weren't. And with about 2 hours left, we made the decision to bail on it. And we only had to go 3/4 of a mile to our number two spot, which was a huge benefit to not have to waste a whole bunch of time to run to another location. It was literally 1 minute away. We got lucky that the pods of fish were still grouped up. Death jigs and jigging wraps, you know, were the key for us. One piece of structure was, you know, a rock finger with isolated humps. The other one was a hump with gravel and like sand grass mixed in, like 1 foot weeds. Similar but different. The way the fish set up was identical. The decision making during the day to go from one to the next was based off of how many fish are you catching. Match two was, the conditions were insane. 4 to 6 foot waves. Boat control was critical. But Andrew in the back of the boat was just, bless him, he's running the kicker motor in the back of the boat just so we could maintain position. The extra thrust so we're not burning batteries. Luckily enough, and unfortunately for Ted and Cody, like, they lost an absolute shootout to Eric and Steve. So we had our number one spot all to ourselves. And in those waves, fish aren't scared to eat. It's full-blown chew mode. So we went out, and Andy said, do what you need to do. Catch the fish we need to win this match. Go crazy. And we beat up on fish for 2 hours and decided to make a move to our number two location. That played a huge factor into match three because we didn't sit there and beat up on the fish constantly for 8 hours in one day. It takes a toll. The fish start getting a little skittish. The schools break apart. They're a little more scattered. That kind of deal. Moving into the championship, at that point, you don't have to save anything. There's no reason to be cautious in catching fish. So we fished about a 300-yard section all day. Well, within the last half hour, we made a move. But we fished a 300-yard section for 3.5 hours and just went crazy on the fish. And it showed. We had our first 100-pound, you know, match of our head-to-head career.
Yeah, that's a great day to do that, obviously.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It is. And then nothing aside, like, Joel put an absolute whooping on us in the first hour and a half. Like, he had us running.
Yeah, he had like 27 some. I kind of got plugged in. Sadly, I kind of got plugged into the match a couple hours in, so I was like seeing that, you know, in hindsight or whatever, but yeah, that's definitely a fun and interesting point to make, that like he had like, you know, round up to like a 30-pound like first hour of the day, dude. I can't even like fathom that, dude. Yeah.
It's a 120-pound pace for one person.
Yeah.
I mean, that's incredible. I'm not 100% sure, but I think he still caught like 14 fish that day. I think we had 23 in 4 hours. It's insanity. The numbers of fish that are located up there right now is incredible. And it shows to the health of the fishery right now.
100%.
And to go into the championship match, though, knowing that we didn't beat on our number one spot, we had a really good secondary spot. Like, the end of the championship match, that half hour, I think we pulled 3 fish over 5 pounds. In the last half hour off of it. The end of the second match, we pulled 2 or 3 fish off of it. I think one of them was an 8-pounder. So those were almost bonus fish. We survived match one on our secondary spot by catching a few fish. We would have never won that match if we didn't. So it's really comparable to an 8-hour match where you've got 1, 2, 3, and 4 spots. It's just the efficiency side of it played dividends.
And the beauty of this is we can have this conversation. If anybody wants to kind of fill in the gaps of the fishing conversation, you know, head to YouTube, or it's all digital. You know, the videos are alive and well, and it's super fun to go back and watch. Have you guys gone back? Have you had a chance to, did you guys watch it back right away at all?
Every match we've watched back the next day. Yeah. So after the playoffs, like, one of the rules, because it's 3 matches in a row, if you're still involved in the tournament, you're not allowed to watch anything. You like, we have to be cognizant in even Facebook or Instagram, you know, social media posting. We've got to watch what we're looking at, because there's replays.
Yes.
of highlights, and any information gained in that aspect is against the rules.
Okay. That's interesting.
So,
yeah.
So we can't gain anything at all if we're still in the event.
But from an entertainment standpoint, It's just kind of curious. I suppose there's probably to some extent like a little bit of a cringe factor where you got to watch yourself, you know, like fishing live or whatever. But there's a lot to learn from it. Tremendously a lot to learn from it. You know, like anybody, right? Like football players watch film of themselves to get better or whatever. So that's sort of like a kind of an interesting, a fun thought, you know, for you guys.
The cringe factor is us having to watch our Winnebago events back. I think we're like 0-7 in 2 years on Lake Winnebago. And this is crazy because we've actually had some pretty good practice periods.
That's funny.
But it's a lot of fun to watch it back. You learn, you know, I spoke with somebody at a club tournament and he said that he loves watching the matches back in detail because he can pick up on different techniques that other anglers are using to trigger fish and then apply it to what he's doing on his day of fishing. So it's live. Like, there's not a lot of hiding secrets
right
during matches. Like, if you don't want something known, you're just not doing it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, it's a very large learning experience, too, when you can go back and you can process what happened in your own decision-making and then look at what everybody else was doing and be like, ha, there it is. That's where I messed up. Or that was the factor in making us take that next step and win this match.
Yeah, I take a bunch away. I mean, every time I watch, I choose to watch stuff so much more for like the opportunity to learn than I ever would for like entertainment factor. You know, being able to see you guys fish, you know, 10 or 15 casts in a row without catching a fish, but because you're casting at fish on forward sonar, you know, I can see the spectrum of what, you know, the guys that are trying to be versatile with, you know, who's reaching for another rod and what, you know, what, why they decide to do that, why that's the confidence versus somebody that sticks with the thing they have in their hand, but they're being more versatile with it and always giving fish a different look, or how often you cast back at the same fish. And maybe why, you know, some fish are probably so big that you have to give them four or five looks because it's worth it. And then in other cases, you know, you're casting at whatever's in front of you and maybe you're thinking that they're 3-pounders. So you're going to give them one good look and try to find the next one. Like all those little thought processes that don't always get super blown up in the conversation are all those things that I love being able to kind of witness and that this, you guys fishing that head to head stuff has really, really been the real opportunity for that for me and for other consumers that are willing to kind of dig into that. I think that there's so much, but it all matters.
Man. It all matters. Every decision in the 4-hour period has a result.
Yeah. Like a consequence, good or bad.
Consequence, good or bad, yes. Everything you do matters. It's elevated, it's highlighted.
And I'll say, you know, you and I had never met, or we've never spoken before. I was, you know, full disclosure, I was kind of rooting for Joe. I've gotten to know him over the last couple of years, and I'm just got so much respect for him. But you know, it's so fun to see you guys having that respect for each other.
Personally, I was rooting for him also. I loved seeing him where he was. I'm happy we came out on top, but if we were to not win and Joe were to win, I would have been just as happy because he was just as happy for us.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. Is. Isn't that interesting? Joe is just, gosh, he is a one percenter. He's so humble.
He is.
It's bothersome how humble he is. It's irritating just how genuinely great of a dude he is. A phenomenal angler. But yeah, you guys definitely, it's cool that, it's cool. It's cool what's going on there. Well, dude, I would say, well, we can wrap this up, and I'm sure we definitely will have to have more conversations down the road. I would say we'll wrap this up. You know, if there's anything that you want to promote, if you, you know, sponsors or your socials, if, you know, if anybody wants to kind of follow the exploits or have questions for you on the fishing or anything that you want to throw out there.
Social medias, I've got an Instagram, Nicholas Katowski, and I have a Facebook page. I've got one that I try to add a whole bunch of content to, or at least keep updated on the season, and everything gets distracted, but Nicholas Katowski Fishing. That's where you can find me and keep up with me and hopefully interact a little bit. I love talking to people about fishing, and it's just it's a passion.
Well, I'll let you back to it, man. Great to talk to you, and we'll be in touch shortly.
Sounds good. Thank you.